Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome in. You are listening to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck, and I am your host for the first hour, where we will be recapping this crazy week in the markets. A lot of craziness was expected because of that Fed meeting, but boy, oh boy, Trump also wanted to get some of those headlines as well with those tariffs that were announced very shortly after that Fed rate cut. We're going to talk a lot about the rate cut, where we stand for markets, mostly focused on the market reaction in this show, because throughout the week at the tail end, I covered a lot of initial reactions to the Fed statement. In the first two segments, I am chatting with a good friend of the show, Rick Bensignor. He writes the Bensignor Investment Strategies newsletter. And Rick, you really have been on top of a lot of these market moves, especially when it comes to the U.S. equity markets. And that's where we are going to start today. Some wild swings in the markets. And I even saw that for someone who had been bullish for last few months, especially after you called that global bottom in equities back on pretty much Christmas last year, I see that you are getting a little bit more bearish. Can you please take us through some of your thoughts behind this?
Sure, Corey. Well, thanks again for having me on. Over the last couple of weeks, we've been cautioning our clients about adding any new long exposure in the market. We've been fairly content at keeping what we've had long on the long side. But through a variety of models that we use, we were really getting indications of upside exhaustion. Back in early June, when the S&P pulled back again to kind of the 27 and a quarter-ish level, roughly the same level of the March low, once it turned around and started spiking up, we put a target out at 3,032. And that's been in every one of our reports since then. And the closer we were getting, once we got north of 3,000, and we start getting some of these real upside exhaustion signals from other things that got us to the 30-32 target, then we really could get cautious on the market. And we're basically saying, don't be buying stocks here. If anything, do the opposite. Take some exposure down. Now, besides the 30-32 target, some of these indicators come from models designed by a gentleman named Tom DeMark. These are institutional-based models that we incorporate into the process that I've used for years and years, and they can be very helpful tools at identifying when in an uptrend it would really be a high-risk time to be a buyer. Now, some people over the years have said, well, if it's a really high-risk time to be a buyer, it probably means you should be a seller. The model wasn't designed with that as its intent, but you know, you can buy pullbacks in uptrends, and you can also buy strength. What this model does is essentially tell you when not to be buying strength in an up move or selling weakness in a down move. And what was interesting to me, and we made very clear to our clients, both in the No Trader clients, which is our individual investor newsletter, and Bensignor Investment Strategies is our consulting arm that deals with hedge funds and mutual funds on the institutional side. But I alerted both of them that these signals were showing up both on daily charts and on weekly charts. And they count the same way, but the mechanics towards getting these numbers on a weekly chart essentially takes almost 6 months to potentially get a sell signal, whereas for a daily chart, it could come as quickly as 1 month of trading action. So the fact that both time frames independently came up with upside exhaustion signals when we were getting awfully close to 30-32, the S&P got to 30-28 this week. I think it was Monday's high, or maybe even late last week's high was 30-28. So, I mean, we were a fraction of a percent away from our target. It was very clear to us we did not want to be buying. The decline, and as I said, we've been saying, if anything, lighten up. We lowered tactical long exposure earlier this week and did so again this morning, going neutral. on the open. And for long short hedge funds, we took down over the last month, we went from 100% long down to, I think we lowered it to 60% long, I believe. The thing that's interesting is because the market moves so quickly now, the downside levels that we talk about as being key, and often these are different than the average numbers that other people are looking at, because we always do try to look much more how not only institutions will look, but not the obvious thing. So yes, I always know where a 200-day moving average is or a 50-day moving average, but I'm much less likely to play off of them, mostly because the public tends to look at those as being significant. On the institutional side, what I had identified was 29.11 as the important place to look for if we had broken under 29.50. And of course, 29.50 was the old highs. So I kind of had a feeling people, if we broke underneath there, you're going to get a lot more people on TV talking about, oh, 29.50 cracked, we're going much lower. So today's low in the S&P was 29.14, just 3 points away from where we said was the important level. And we closed at 29.32. So we lost about 0.75% today, but almost 20 points off the bottom. So it makes it up here, 29.32. I don't mind being a seller, but I'm not going to be a seller here. I'd be a seller higher, probably closer to, let's see, I would think probably north of 29.60, 29.65 or so, something north of there is where I'd be more comfortable selling than down here. The last piece of the puzzle on the S&P is the same calculation that got us 29.11 as being important support off of a daily chart ends up being 28.79 on a weekly chart. So that gives me basically about a 30-35 point range, which is just above 1% of value that, to me, the S&P needs to hold to still think that we possibly are just in a pullback over all this news, and the news is not good. Frankly, yesterday really crushed me as a trader because I had just put a bid in the crude oil market underneath the day's lows, and it started bouncing. In fact, I texted my friend saying, I'm not sure I'm going to get it because we just rallied 20, 25 cents. And then all of a sudden, my machine speaks to me, goes, order filled, as it does when I get my orders filled. And when I look at my screen, I see oil has not only gone through where I bid, but it was down 40 to 50 cents before I even blinked an eye, and then fell $1.50 within 3 minutes. It was a bad day yesterday, and this all, you know, from the Trump tweet, which just comes out of nowhere. And this is, and you and I have talked about this before, Corey, this is the extra risk you take with Trump in the White House, with a president who, you know, just does anything when he wants and does it through tweets. And it just, you know, computers these days read these tweets and in a split second. I mean, the fact that you can sell oil off $1.50 in 5 minutes is just incredible.
All on the back of a tweet too, right? It's tough as a short-term trader in these markets because you can get blindsided. But I do want to revisit that comment you made about having that sell signal on both the daily and weekly charts. The sell signal came, we got a fairly aggressive sell-off here down to some of your targets, or at least close to some of your targets. Mm-hmm. But as you said, weekly sell signals take longer to develop. That, to me, makes me think at least that there could be a little bit more downside here. What am I missing?
It's all about how we react when we get to 28.80. So we didn't get there this week. We certainly could get there next week, right? It's what, 50 points away. It's less than 2%. So depending upon if there's follow-through selling. But if we get underneath 28.80 next week, based upon the rules of how to play these signals, it's actually not a sell signal breaking underneath it because this week was already a down week relative to last Friday's close. So if anything, I'd be more apt to almost be buying next week against that level for a trade. Maybe even if we start the week off let's say, weekly, W-E-A-K-L-Y, with weakness in the market, and we fall to 28.80-ish early in the week, I might very well buy it for a bounce back up to 29.50 and then start looking to sell again. So I'm not likely going to sell a decline next week in and around the 28.80 level. But if next week happens to close above today's close, so next Friday, if we close above 29.32, and then the following week we trade down to 28.80, there's a better chance if we break it than I'm a seller with something like a 27.30 target, which again brings us down to, it would be a third time down to somewhere in and around, let's say, 27 and a quarter plus or minus 10 S&P points. So because of how we look and try to exploit behavior and inefficient, how shall I say, often inaccurate decisions made by portfolio managers at the wrong times, that's how we put up the numbers we do. And you know, a few weeks ago when I was last on with you, I think we were up about 62% or so year to date. We're still long gold, and our home run trade of the year is that we're long solar names and short oil and gas names against it as a pair trade. And that trade is now worth something like 35 or 40% return on a pair trade. So we could easily be up 70% year to date already with being taking far less risk than being invested in the market at all times.
Yeah, I think that's key too in these markets. I don't think you want to be holding 100% position in really anything just because of these swings that we can get and change in overall psychology. Let's look at the bond market too, because yields on the back of Trump's tweet really crashed, especially the long end. The 10-year down below 2% and down at levels we haven't seen since about 2016. This, of course, I think you can say that Trump was trying to push on the Fed, but also pushing on China. And now we have rate cut odds in September already at 100%. That's an extreme. That is 6 weeks away. What do you think about that bond market, though? Money keeps flying in and yields, especially on the long end, keep on falling.
Yeah, so this is a difficult one when you look at it as both a trader and an also a macro strategist, as I am, because, you know, traders tend to be looking short term, days, weeks, occasionally a great trade can last a couple months, but you're not looking for the, you know, what the market's going to be doing 6 months out and a year out. The U.S. has still been the only place in the world of a developed nation to get significant yield. And, you know, some people have been proponents of it's only a matter of time before we go much lower in yields because the rest of the global investment community just keeps buying U.S. bonds because it's the only place to get some yield. And, of course, as you buy bonds, yields go lower and lower. So at one point today, if I'm not mistaken, the German 30-year bond actually traded under 0% return, which meant their entire yield curve had negative interest rates. I believe that's the first time the entire curve going all the way out to 30 years had that. By the end of the day, I think it was up to maybe 2 basis points. So yeah, the 30 went slightly positive. But basically, anywhere else in the world, it costs you money to put your money in the bank. And the U.S. has been the only place that you can still get some type of return. So investors all over the world go to buy dollars. Those dollars let them buy U.S. bonds, which is part of the reason why the dollar has been bid up. In order to get your hands on a U.S. Treasury bonds, which you need to buy in U.S. dollars, or U.S. stocks. Again, the best performing place in the world has been the U.S. stock market. So that's why the dollar's been flying too. But when it comes to the bond market, this crack under the low, I guess, of about a month ago of 1.95%, which was kind of my line in the sand. And I had us short bonds at about, I don't know, maybe 2.05%, give or take a little, looking for yields to go higher before they would take out that 1.95. But Trump's tweet changed that. And now, you know, the only levels I kind of see that are even remotely near the 1.85 or so that the 1.85% that the market is right now on Friday's close is 1.81 and then 1.728. Those are the only two levels that I really see nearby as being potential support levels in yield terms. You know, there are going to be those who argue that the U.S. rates are going to have to still move dramatically lower. And you know, look, we're seeing something we might – a change in the whole structure of the interest rate market globally. We've already seen it in Europe to have negative rates. The U.S. only had that once back, I think it was 1930s, on the short end of the curve. T-bills had a negative yield, but never any stuff on the long side. And I'm not saying we're going at negative interest rates, but there is this idea of getting money for storing it in the bank seemingly is a very changing game. And, you know, I'm not quite sure what to make of it other than I really don't want to be fighting something that A, I don't completely understand, and B, seems to be generally obvious of what's happening here. So, you know, now's not probably the time or place to first be buying bonds simply because the sentiment in the bond market. In fact, I can tell you coming into today, 89% of futures traders polled were bullish bonds, 30-year bonds, and 77% were bullish the 10-year bond. After today, these numbers are even going to be higher. So we're getting very, very stretched in bullish sentiment, but it's also not been wrong to have been bullish bonds. So I got this one wrong by you know, selling bonds at 2.05%, looking for about 2.25%, and it hasn't happened. And you know, I'll take my loss and move on, and then try to figure out what comes next. But there is this almost generational shift going on, in as far as just low interest rates, and it's an event happening across the globe, and the Fed is almost forced into lowering rates, and this is not a political statement about because Trump wants them lower. It's because that's what the market's pricing. And at some point, I think the Fed has to follow what the market is pricing. They're kind of forced to.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? The Fed is almost being reactive to the markets because they have to. And you know what? The generational shift, I think a lot of that is also coming from the central banks that just continue to push rates lower and seem very comfortable, I guess, with rates, negative yields almost across the board. So very, very different time that we're in. Let's also quickly chat about gold here, because gold had a bad day on the back of the rate cut, but then pretty quickly bounced back, finished the week strong. Gold continues to be that standout when it comes to the precious metals, even when you compare it to silver. And even, I think, curiously, at the end of the week, gold stocks didn't really join in on the rally into gold that we saw. More of the safe haven play, where gold has finally caught the attention of a lot wider audience, I think.
It certainly has, because it had a major multi-year breakout. You know, we finally took out all those highs in the 1350 to 1380 per ounce range. Funds came in buying up the market, you know, specs are in there, and we've pushed up to this week's high. So December gold, which is now the active contract, closed, I don't know, it's about 1452 or so. It's still trading for another half hour or so. But, you know, we pushed to new highs. We got to 1462 today. And a few days ago, actually just 2 days ago, or maybe it's yesterday morning. Yeah, so two trading days ago, gold got down to, December gold was down to like 1412, I believe. So it's had a huge comeback. And of course, people are flocking into gold, both as a psychological hedge, but concerns also about currencies in the long run, concerns over this China deal being dramatically pushed back in time. And as I wrote in the note that you got last night, Corey, I think that this deal with China was never—it's never like one day they sign something and the deal is done, and you know, you have this completed thing. This is an ongoing process that's going to take a long, long time. But I wholeheartedly believed that within 6 to 9 months, we were going to have some type of deal on the table that at least really got the ball rolling in a cooperative effort between the two countries to work on the tariff issues and, you know, trade. Rather than saying tariff issues, let's just say trade negotiations between the two countries and the massive imbalance that the U.S. has had to deal with for years. Trump adding these extra tariffs on effective September 1st, yesterday, catching the market off guard, to me says he's not interested in this deal taking place anytime soon. I don't think he wants to make this go away. I think he's almost, you know, kind of, well, in words that are often associated with Trump, and I try to keep politics out of things, but, you know, there are many people who call him a bully. I think he's trying to bully China into, by putting on the additional tariffs, into caving into his demands. What I think it ultimately does is make China walk away for even longer periods of time. And something I had said the other day, I was actually interviewing Mark Yusko of Morgan Creek Capital for Real Vision. And in that interview, I said, I think it's Trump's looking at this as the longer he can delay the deal with China, the more it can become something that he can put to use for his election campaign starting in November, you know, for another full year. He obviously wants to be president again. So in his mind, he probably has a year to a year and a half to put this deal together. And the closer we get to actual presidential elections late next year, the better chance that he's going to try to make this deal happen so that he has what he considers more feathers in his cap that voters can rally behind him. So I think there's a lot of politics in this, both in his willingness to push off trade negotiations and also because he wanted Jay Powell and the Fed to lower rates more than they did. So by putting this tariffs on, he just made interest rates, you know, on the long end of the curve fall 13 basis points yesterday and several more today. So he's saying, well, if the Fed's not going to do it, I'm just going to make it happen. So I think there's a lot of politics behind what's going on here, and that the timing of this move had a lot to do with the Fed's, you know, this coming 24 hours after the Fed's meeting on Wednesday. But the world's gonna have to deal with a much, much lower interest rate environment. And, you know, it's good for business growth because the cost of money is so low. It's bad for the public and certainly the elder generation, whether it's, you know, anywhere in the globe, that interest rates are so low and, you know, people who are retired are not working and they typically would rely on yields as a way to supplement and create income for themselves. And it puts them in a much more difficult spot because they're getting so much less in the bank. And unless you have a great pension plan or sucked a lot of money away, not getting returns each month or a coupon to clip to generate income is really a problem for elder people. And I don't think he really has thought about it. And based upon what the Europeans have already done with interest rates, it doesn't seem like that's a major factor to them. They're seemingly much more concerned about, quote, the economy and keeping rates low to spur growth. But the growth isn't happening that much. Other than in the U.S., you're not getting that much growth anyway. So there really are some issues here. And it's sooner or later, there will be a price to pay for all this. But I guess it's not right now.
Hey, Rick, it's great having you on the show. I always take very close note what you have to say, both from a market standpoint and just what's going on around the world now with politics playing such a big role in the day-to-day, especially trading in these markets. Remember, Rick does write the Bensignor Investment Strategies newsletter, more geared at institutions, and then also the In the Know Trader for the individual investor. Anybody who wants some more information on those newsletters, feel free to email me, fleck@keereport.com. Rick, I hope you have a great weekend, my friend. Thanks for joining us.
You too, Corey. Have a great one.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.